In fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.
Here come the drums.
C-R-I-M-E-W-A-V. You're rolling with the Crime Wave, the internet's first and only podcast devoted to the crime short story. I'm Seth Harwood, your host, the first name in crime podcast fiction, and I'm ready to bring you this week's story. The Crime Wave is produced by Mystery Dog, Aldo Calcagno, and it is not safe for your minivans. That means it might contain swearing, violence, and all types of shit.
Killing O'Malley by Reed Farrell Coleman, as written under his pen name, Tony Spinoza, in the short story anthology, Hardboiled Brooklyn. Though only pushing 40, Pete Connell was a bitter old fuck, the kind of man to turn the host into ashes at the touch of his tongue. Body of Christ, my ass. He was the worst kind of bitter old fuck, an impotent, drunken one, and a liar to boot. His shamed relations claimed 1,000 reasons for Pete's sour spirit, their favorite centering on the horrors of D-Day. "Oh, poor Peter," they would say. "The war's what's done him in. His spirit couldn't take the carnage on the Normandy beaches. His soul simply broke in the face of so much death, and the bottle, it's ruined better man than himself." An eloquent defense for sure, but utter bullshit. The only sand to have touched Pete's bony white feet had come from the Brighton beach. As for the war, the closest he'd come to D-Day combat was slapping around a two-buck whore in Omaha, Nebraska, for laughing at his limp dick. She'd return the favor by slashing his face with a straight razor. "Kraut shrapnel," he'd bark whenever anyone asked about the scar. Perhaps the weakest excuse of all was the drink. In the overall scheme of things, Pete Connell had brought more troubles to the bottle than the bottle to him. No, some men are just bitter born, and he was one. There was but one pleasure, one pure joy in his miserable existence, his beloved Brooklyn Dodgers. Them bums were it for him. Forget Kelly Green Irish blood, Pete Connell bled Brooklyn Dodger blue. That night at Muldoon's, when the news fell on the patrons like a British comet plummeting out of the sky, Pete was already feeling it. He was several sheets to the wind, beer and bile indistinguishable to his palate. And what made the news more unbearable was the messenger who delivered it. Pete Connell despised Michael Duke for everything Duke was, and he was not. Whereas Connell has pissed away his police career, taking a five-buck bribe and a blowjob from a colored whore and getting caught in the act, Duke had built his American dream out of death and dust. Then again, Connell always sold himself cheap. Even now, as the produce manager at the Packer supermarket on King's Highway, Pete had sown the seeds of his own demise. For months, he'd been selling a quarter of his daily order to a local greengrocer on Avenue P for 10 cents on the dollar, and putting the shortages down as spoil. 10 cents on the dollar, that said it all about Peter Connell. Michael Duke had come to the States after the war with the first wave of refugees and camp survivors. When he arrived in Brooklyn in 1946, he was Mikhail Dukelski, a 21-year-old from the outskirts of Kiev who had exploited his wits and math skills to impress his Einsatzgruppen masters enough to last 3 years under their blood-red thumbs. He had used his 10 years in New York to change more than his name. Now a citizen and a certified public accountant employed by the city, he lived a quiet, comfortable life with his wife and newborn son in a nicely appointed two-bedroom flat on Avenue H. He'd even purchased a plot of land in the Catskills on which he someday hoped to build a summer bungalow. His one selfish pleasure was his after-dinner stroll to Muldoon's Tavern at the junction of Flatbush and Nostrand Avenues. Mike enjoyed the serenity of the Brooklyn College campus as he made his way to the bar for his nightly stein of Rheingold. It relaxed him, strolling across the peaceful green quadrangle, stopping to gaze up at the clock mounted atop the white steeple. He loved the chiming of the bells. In the Ukraine, there were clock and bell towers too. Thousands of them. Not even the Nazis and the accursed Soviets could have destroyed them all. But Duke thought the Brooklyn College Tower most beautiful. It was so un-European, so devoid of religious connotation. That night, however, he did not linger to gaze up at the clock tower. "If it ain't Mike the Kike," Pete whispered just loud enough for Duke to hear. Usually, Michael ignored the man's asinine barbs. Compared to the inhumanity he had had to suffer at the hands of the SS, Connell's bigotry was no more than the buzzing of a fly. But just lately, it had begun to eat at him. Maybe it was the birth of his son, Alan, that had changed his attitude. That he had been forced to endure the hatred of others in the old country was one thing, but this was America. He was an American, and Michael would be damned if he would let small-minded cowards like Pete Connell poison his son's life. Tonight, he would see to that. The bar was empty save for Connell, Muldoon himself, Hattie the hooker, and the professor, a bum who had Einstein hair and scribbled nonsense on bazooka bubblegum wrappers. "Hey, Mikey," Muldoon brightened, putting up a tall glass of beer. "How goes it?" "Thank you, Patrick," Duke said, placing two quarters up on the bar. "As to your question, I fear it goes not so well." "How's that?" the barman asked. "I bring bad news. Terrible news." "What, someone blow up the Hebrew National hot dog factory?" Connell blurted out, laughing at his own joke. He was the only one who laughed. "Very funny, Pete, but why not cut the man some slack?" Muldoon snapped. "No, Patrick, that's all right," Duke said. "After I divulge my news, we will all need to find a way to laugh." Duke sipped his beer. "Yeah, Hebe, you even got my attention." "Well, you know, Patrick, I work for the city budget office, right? And if you recall, a few months back, I mentioned I was working on a very serious project that could affect all of Brooklyn." Muldoon clapped his hands together. "Sure, sure. But you said it was very hush-hush and you couldn't say much about it, 'cause it could land you in hot water." "Yes, Patrick, you remember." "Enough with the suspense, Hebe," Connell snarled. "Okay, I guess I should just say it then. The Dodgers are leaving Brooklyn forever." Connell spit out his drink. Hattie lifted her head off the bar. The professor stopped scribbling. The professor never stopped scribbling. "I like you a lot, Mikey," said Muldoon, "but you shouldn't order a joke like that." "I wish only that it was a joke, Patrick." Duke held his hands prayerfully. "But I swear on the souls of my murdered parents that I speak the truth." Grief grew heavy in the air as Michael Duke explained how Mayor Wagner tried calling O'Malley's bluff and how O'Malley had, in no uncertain terms, told Wagner to go fuck himself. "He did this little Irish jig," Mike said, lifting his trouser legs and hopping from foot to foot. "He invited Wagner to come visit him in L.A., and that he would find the mayor some nice seats in the Coliseum with the wetbacks, chinks, and japs." Of course, this last part of Duke's story was a complete fabrication, meant specifically for Pete's ears. Mike went on for 10 minutes, describing in excruciating detail how Mr. O'Malley had taken great pleasure in his own greed and the thought of spitting on all of Brooklyn. "The things he said, I'm embarrassed to even repeat them. I was sick to hear such things." "Go on," Connell demanded. "Tell me what he said." "First," Duke said, placing a 10-spot on the bar, "a round for all of us. You too, Patrick." "Okay, Kike," Pete said after downing a shot of Irish. "Let's have it. Every word." Mike suggested that he and Pete retire to a corner table to discuss it themselves. No need to upset anyone else more than they already were. When they got to the table, Mike said he knew that Pete hated him, But on this issue, they were brothers. That tonight all of Brooklynites were brothers in grief. Connell grudgingly agreed. Mike waved to Muldoon to keep the drinks coming. Duke laid it on thick, pulling Pete's strings with every word, whispering so that only the man across the table from him could hear. First he told him how O'Malley admitted to always hating guineas, Pollocks, Krauts, and Spicks. O'Malley says the only reason he ever let niggers on the team was because the fucking Jew bankers demanded it. But I'm sorry to say, Pete. May I call you Pete? Connell nodded yes. I'm sorry to say that O'Malley hates his own people worst of all. He called you all a bunch of stupid micks, donkeys that couldn't think their way out of a potato patch. Said the Irish who came over after the famine were the dregs of the race, the very worst kind of shanty scum imaginable. Pete seemed almost in shock. He laid his head down across his folded arms. It's okay, Pete, Mike comforted, placing a hand on his shoulder. Let's get you a double. You need it. He waved at Muldoon. The barman brought over the drinks, waiting for Muldoon to retreat to the bar. Duke suggested to his newfound friend that they compose a letter to the Dodgers owner. You'll speak for all of Brooklyn, Pete, and on my honor, I will hand-deliver the letter to Mr. O'Malley tomorrow. Hey, nut job, Connell barked at the professor. Give me your fucking pen or I'll snap your neck like a toothpick. The nervous little man ran out the door, dropping his pen at Connell's feet as he passed. Mike Duke leaned down to retrieve the pen and then unfurled a bar napkin. He wrote as Pete Connell spewed out a stream of curses that would make a tombstone blush. Muldoon tried to listen but couldn't make out a word. 10 minutes and another round later, Mike Duke stood up and placed the napkin in his back pocket. Good night, Pete. Again, I'm sorry for this terrible news. Yeah, sure. You just remember to do what you promised with that note, Connell slurred. Mike hesitated. I'm sorry, Pete. I can't do that. You couldn't have meant what you had me write down. In a day or two, you might feel differently, and give me the fucking letter, you kike, or I'll finish what the Nazis couldn't. Mike shrugged his shoulders. Dutifully, he handed the folded napkin to Pete, who made a show of balling it up and shoving it into his jacket pocket. Now get the fuck out of here. On his way out, Mike slipped Muldoon another $5 and told him to keep Pete's drinks coming. You're a better man than me, Mikey, Muldoon said. I feel sad for him, Patrick, and tonight we're all in mourning, no? I too am a little shickered, or I would stay and keep an eye on Pete. He's in such a bad way. Well, good night, my friend. He shook the barman's hand and left. 2 hours later, Pete Connell stumbled out of Muldoon's into the moonless night. Using walls, fences, parked cars to keep him upright, he made his way home. He was way too drunk to notice either the cold rain or the man across the street who had shattered his every step and turn. When Connell slipped into a narrow alleyway between his building and the subway trestle to piss, his shadow closed ground. Who's there? It's just me, Pete, your new friend. What? That word formed Pete Connell's mouth into perfect shape to receive the barrel of Michael Duke's Luger. Connell froze. That pleased Mike very much, but not quite as much as his timing. Do you recognize this pistol? Mike taunted. It's the one you took off the dead Wehrmacht captain at Omaha Beach. You tell that story to everyone who comes into Muldoon's. I've heard you tell the story 5 times in one night. Surely the police will not question its origin when they find it next to your body. The note in your pocket will make mention of it, just in case. Connell's eyes got wide with fear and sudden comprehension. That's right, my new buddy. Not your drunken ravings about killing O'Malley, but a suicide note. As the subway rumbled by, Mike Duke blew Connell's brain out the back of his skull with the Luger he had taken off an SS captain as the Russians approached his labor camp in the woods outside Kiev. Michael had slit the Nazi's throat and urinated on him as he bled to death. What was that old saying about dancing with the devil? You don't change the devil changes you. He did not urinate on Connell's body, though. Instead, he placed the dead man's right hand around the grip of the Luger and let gravity take its course. Then he placed the note in Pete's pocket with the one he had composed as he waited for Connell to emerge from Muldoon's. After calmly checking that things looked just right, Michael Duke walked home to his nicely appointed two-bedroom apartment. There he peeled off his gloves and clothing, patiently throwing them down the incinerator chute one item at a time. He couldn't risk anything getting jammed in the chute. After his shower, Mike stood silent vigil in his son's room, watching little boy toss and turn in his crib until the sun came up. At about the same time, the cops were rolling over Pete Connell's stiff body and reading the suicide note taken from his pocket. The poor man just couldn't bear the thought of the Dodgers moving out of Brooklyn. He didn't want to spend his days pining for his beloved Bums, obsessed with thoughts of killing O'Malley. It was just easier, the note said, to end his own life. When news of the Dodgers' pending move broke later that morning, the detectives understood completely. They felt much the same way. All Brooklyn did. That day, Mike Duke was the only happy man in all the borough of Brooklyn.
In fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.
Here come the drums!
Thank you for listening to The Crime Wave. I'm your host, Seth Harwood. I hope you'll check out the rest of the stories here on Crime Wave and tell your friends about it. It's the CRIMEWAV. Help pass the word, register at our site so that you can participate in the forums and add comments to the episodes. You can email us with questions or comments at info@crimewave.com. Aldo, the mystery dog, and I will get your email, and we'll get back to you right quick. You can also call the K7 line, 206-350-4998, to leave comments or feedback. And if you leave a great message, we'll even play it at the end of a show. So drop a line, hop on the website, visit often, spread the word, and thank you for stopping by The Crime Wave. Here's a song to the star, but the shape of a snake and a smile that went along with that. Get drunk!